Thank you, Heather, and the Women's Caucus for the chance to chat with all of you today. My disclosure is I have no relationships to disclose. So to tell you a little bit about what I'm going to be talking about today is a look at two things that the National Women's Law Center has worked on recently. The first comes from a report that we issued last year called Women in Health Coverage, the Affordability Gap. I don't have copies of this in the back, but if you'd like a copy, there's a sign-up list in the back. Just make a note or come see me afterwards and I'll be sure to get you. But all of these reports are available on our website. The portion about women and the affordability gap, I'll go through some of the challenges that women face in accessing health care. The second part of my presentation, I'm going to be talking about a report that we just issued about a month ago. It looks at the issue of access to health insurance and the individual health insurance market, and particularly the challenges that women face in this market. It's called Nowhere to Turn, How the Individual Health Insurance Market Fails Women. We have copies in the back as well. And the whole reason why we're focusing on these issues is as debates around healthcare reform heat up at the state and national level, we feel that it's very important to pay attention to these kinds of issues as different policy proposals are being debated, because unless and until the health access needs of women are addressed, healthcare reform will not be successful for women. And with that, we're going to propose, actually, 8 questions for healthcare reform at the end. So just by way of background, in terms of insurance coverage patterns, women generally face higher rates of insurance coverage than men, but that's due primarily due to the fact that because women earn less than men, they're more likely to be covered by Medicaid and public health programs. And so what you find is that 7 out of 10 adult recipients of Medicaid are in fact women. If you look at insurance coverage patterns among women of different races and ethnicities, again, this is probably no surprise to anyone. While 18% of all women are uninsured, these numbers are significantly higher among different races and ethnicities. And in fact, Latina women have the highest rates of uninsurance at almost 38%. If you look at insurance coverage patterns by age, women have lower rates of uninsurance than men in every single age group except one. And it's this age, at age 55 to 64. And this goes to the issue of what often happens is that women have an older spouse who are covered by Medicare, and women lose their health insurance coverage when that spouse who had insurance through an employer then qualifies for Medicare, and those women end up being uninsured. And we see tremendous disparities by state. I know Bridget talked about this a little bit, that in the Southwest, we see uninsurance rates over 20%. So we could come up with some kind of a national healthcare reform, but the states certainly have such tremendous variations among uninsurance by women that we'll need to be especially aware of how those differences could play out. This slide relates to what I just mentioned about the fact that women face greater insurance instability than men. This is due to the fact, and again, a lot of these statistics are not necessarily surprising, that women are much more likely to be covered by a spouse or a family member's health insurance, and thus they face greater insurance instability due to several factors. First, they have to have their spouse stay in a job that maintains health insurance coverage. And we know that among employers that are dropping health insurance coverage, it's for family coverage that is dropping the fastest. And then also, these women have to stay in their marriages to keep that coverage. So this also presents tremendous challenges for women. When I first went to go work at the National Women's Law Center, and I had been working in healthcare reform generally, a lot of my friends and colleagues said, well, don't we want health care reform for everybody? What is it about women? And to me, this is like the slide that I always point to, the statistic that I always show that has like kind of this aha moment for folks. And what it is it looks at the difference between employment status between men and women based on insurance. And if you look at uninsured men, almost 70% of uninsured men work full-time, but less than half of uninsured women work full-time. And how this translates into thinking about policy proposals on healthcare reform is if you come up with healthcare reform that targets insurance in the workplace, you'll do a fabulous job of getting uninsured men covered. You'll do an absolutely lousy job of getting uninsured women covered. And so you really need to be aware of these different issues that come up in thinking about healthcare reform proposals. So that, for example, what are we going to do about part-timers in healthcare reform? How are we going to make sure that they have access to quality, affordable health coverage? So to go a little more into the affordability gap, this slide just shows what I'm sure everyone in here in this room knows, is that women and men have different poverty rates. Women are much more likely to be poor. They earn less than men. Their median income is less. And because of the affordability challenges that women face, this plays out in many different ways in terms of how women access their health care. On average, women do use more healthcare services than men over their lifetimes. This is due to a variety of things, including the fact that they have reproductive health needs, of course. Women are more likely than men to take prescription drugs throughout their lifetimes. Women are more likely than men to suffer from a chronic condition. And then certain mental health problems affect twice as many women as men. So when you start to look at the different ways that women's income impacts their access to healthcare services, what we start to see are a couple of things. First of all, women are much more likely to spend a higher proportion of their income on out-of-pocket costs in healthcare. And this is regardless of what we find is whether or not they have insurance. But this slide looks at men and women who have employer-sponsored or individual insurance. And the important fact or figure is this 10% figure. This is a figure that is widely held to, that if you're spending more than 10% of your income on your healthcare costs, you're considered to be underinsured, meaning that the health coverage you have puts you at such financial risk that basically your health insurance is not meeting your needs. And so women are much more likely than men to be spending greater than 10% of their income on out-of-pocket expenses, and much more likely than men to spend at least 5% of their income on out-of-pocket expenses. Women versus men are much more likely than men to face income-related access barriers, and this is regardless of whether women or men are insured or not. So what this is described as, and the report goes into greater detail, is that women didn't fill a prescription when they needed to, they didn't see a specialist when they needed to, they skipped the recommended medical test or treatment, or they had a medical problem or didn't go to a doctor or a clinic. And so, again, I think the important thing is, you know, we tend to think about access problems among the uninsured, but we saw similar issues regardless of whether folks had insurance or not. Again, this slide shows that women are more likely than men to face medical bill problems. This is described as having outstanding medical bills, being contacted by a collection agency, or having to change a way of life in order to pay those medical bills. Again, regardless of whether folks had insurance or not, women were more likely than men to face medical bill problems. So based on all of these issues around the affordability gap, we also wanted to take a look at how women fare in the individual health insurance market. And we thought it was really important to do this because there are a number of significant healthcare reform proposals at the state and national level that could force more people into the individual insurance market. And because most of us get our health insurance through an employer, we have no idea how really awful of a place it is to have to buy insurance there, especially if you're a woman. So this report attempted to look at how hard it is to get insurance in the individual market. So if you look at where women get their health coverage, that purple slice, 65% get their health coverage from an employer, which is exactly the folks that we wanted to target with this report, to understand exactly what could be at stake. The colors didn't really show through here, but just 7% of women get health insurance through the individual insurance market, 15% through public sources such as Medicaid or Medicare, and 18% uninsured. So if such a small number of women are getting their health insurance through the individual market, why is it important to understand? Well, in addition to the fact that there are a number of healthcare reform proposals that could dramatically expand the role of this market, there are a number of people who do try to get coverage through the individual market and fail. In fact, one study said that 9 out of 10 people who seek coverage in the individual insurance market ultimately don't buy a plan. Another reason why is that we had seen some press coverage recently of a really frightening trend, which is that some employers have decided to stop providing health insurance for their workers and are just giving stipends to their employees to go out and try and buy insurance in the individual market. And then the other piece of this is that there are really critical differences between the individual market and getting your coverage through an employer due to the existence of some really important federal laws that protect all of us when we get our coverage through an employer. So some important definitions just to start with is that medical underwriting, basically insurance companies have free rein to decide whether to offer you coverage, what to cover, and what premium to charge. The practice of gender rating is quite prevalent. Insurers are basically free in 40 states and the District of Columbia to charge women and men different premiums for the same coverage. They defend it by saying it's actuarially justified, meaning that it's based in statistics that there are actual cost differences in providing health insurance to women versus men. What we found, though, is that among plans that gender rate, there is such wide variation that it really begs the question about how arbitrarily it's being implemented. The report goes into much greater detail, but what we did was we used the leading online source of health insurance, ehealthinsurance.com. You can all go home and do this by plugging in your zip code and your age, and then just toggle back and forth on your gender, and you can do the exact same methodology. And what we found was we chose two plans in each state that offered similar coverage. And among the states that gender rate, we found at age 25 that women were charged anywhere between 6 and 45% more for the same exact coverage. At age 40, women were charged between 4 and 48% more. And at age 55, women were charged anywhere from 22% less to 37% more for the same exact coverage. When we looked in individual states at all different kinds of health insurance coverage, meaning they could be really crappy coverage, they could be incredibly comprehensive, the one outlier we found, St. Louis, Missouri, 140% more for one insurance plan sold to 40-year-old women. So there were just such wide variations that it really begged the question about how arbitrary it was. Many of you may reasonably think that the presence of maternity coverage would help explain these huge variations, and what we found was the presence of maternity coverage, in fact, did not explain it at all, and in fact, the overwhelming majority of plans at gender rate did not include any maternity coverage. Certainly, for the ones that are listed up there, none of those plans, in fact, we excluded any plans that included maternity coverage to specifically counter that notion. So the blue states are the ones that ban gender rating. The states that are cross-hatched, which are New Mexico and Vermont, limit the application of gender rating through rate plans, but the majority of states in the District of Columbia do not have any protections. The second part of our report, we wanted to look at the availability of maternity coverage, and we found that most individual insurance policies do not cover maternity care. And in fact, we studied over 3,500 plans offered in 47 states around the country, and 59% of those policies did not offer any maternity coverage whatsoever. 12% covered maternity coverage with what we considered to be comprehensive care. And in fact, we started off just looking to see if they covered maternity at all. And when we started looking a little deeper at these plans, we realized we needed to be a little more careful about how we were calculating that, because we saw wacky things like plans that would only cover a complicated pregnancy or plans that only covered labor and delivery. So we defined comprehensive maternity as including prenatal care, labor and delivery, postnatal care, and routine pregnancies and complications. we found that a number of plans, 20%, offered a supplemental plan called a rider. But these riders can often be a terrible deal for women. And in fact, one that we're using as an example up here is offered in 24 states. So it's the most prevalent one. It's offered by a national health insurer that you would recognize. It costs $106 a month on top of the premiums you would pay. But the rider, during the first 2 years of coverage, only covers $2,000 worth of maternity. And it's only for labor and delivery. It does not cover any prenatal care whatsoever. It also has a 20% coinsurance requirement, so you would pay out of pocket right off the bat 20% of the cost. So basically, if you add up the 20% coinsurance, the over your benefit limit because it only covers $2,000, your annual rider premium, if you had best case scenario an uncomplicated vaginal delivery at the 2006 average cost of $7,500, the woman would pay at least $6,700 out of pocket just for labor and delivery. If she had a complicated cesarean section, she could face as much as $16,000, and I'm sure we all know somebody that has had a complicated pregnancy that costs way more than $17,000. So there are a number of states that have taken efforts to ensure access to maternity care. There are 5 states that require all health insurance plans to cover maternity, so we've got a ways to go there. There are some states that have enacted public programs to help fill these gaps. New Mexico, for example, has adopted a program called PAM, Premium Assistance for Maternity, that if you do not have maternity coverage, the state, for a very low fee, will provide you maternity coverage. But it begs the question, why are we using limited taxpayer dollars to fill the gaps that the insurers are saying that they're doing such a great job of doing when clearly they're not? There are a number of other challenges that women face in the individual market, including being rejected based on health history. Sadly, shockingly, it is still legal in 9 states and the District of Columbia to reject survivors of domestic violence for health insurance. And then there was New York Times coverage recently that I'm sure many of you heard about, where women can be rejected based on having had a previous cesarean section. If you think about the statistics, 1 out of 3 women have a C-section, you're talking about a lot of women who will not be eligible for health insurance coverage. Additional problems, women can be rated based on, all people, their premiums can be rated based on age and based on health status, and then of course pre-existing conditions can be excluded for coverage. So anybody else think the individual market is a good place to buy? So based on everything I've just really wrapped through, and I do have to wrap up, there are 8 questions that we've developed that we think are important, any health reform proposal that's out there, to look at when you think about the issues around the affordability gap, the issues around the individual market. I won't go through them because we do go into the through them in greater detail in our reports. I'm sorry about not talking fast enough. These are the other 4, and would love to talk to you more afterwards and answer any questions you may have. And finally, all of our reports are available through our website and our project, Reform Matters, Making Real Progress for Women in Healthcare. There are a number of resources we have available, including monthly conference calls that talk about different policy issues that we're looking at in terms of women in healthcare reform. So thank you.
Are there any questions for Lisa?
Okay. Lisa, is the argument that women cost more true for women who are in that 45 to 55 age range, where which was one of the ways you broke out the range of how that applies?
On average, women use more healthcare services throughout their lives. So on average, they do cost more. However, our position is that the averages do little to comfort women who cost less than the average man. And also, it's an interesting thing that the insurance industry, until about 40 years ago, used to use race as a rating factor, and they voluntarily abandoned the practice before the states and federal government stepped up and went to outlaw. They didn't have to outlaw it. There are no insurance statutes to ban it, because we tried to look to see what was behind the elimination of using race as a rating factor. And the insurance industry did it voluntarily. So so we think the time has come. There are certainly a number of states that have outlawed it. Montana most notably did it by looking to their state's Equal Rights Amendment as inspiration for outlawing the practice in any insurance policy. They have a unisex insurance law. So we certainly feel very strongly that gender rating should be eliminated completely.
Yeah, I agree. I just have to say, looking at those statistics, and when you break out an age group that includes 55-year-old men, while I'm sure you're absolutely true, right, that women use more services at that age as well as at younger ages, I wouldn't be surprised to find that men don't cost more than that. They're starting to die more. And they're starting to have their strokes and heart attacks at a younger age than women.
When they get older is when they do start to, the men do start to cost more, actually. And 55 was what, we did use 55 as our study number because we knew that that was the age when the cost tended to flip. And we were curious to see how that would reflect. We certainly didn't expect to see that there would be some charging less and some charging more, so.